Tim, we're just waiting for Todd and Tammy to get on. They had a little. Oh, there's Todd.
Sorry, that we apparently have the wrong link. Thanks, Ray, for resending. I guess Tammy said, Tammy, you want to come over here? I apologize. Tammy still can't get hers to work. I don't know what's going on because we Zoom all the time, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay, mine's working now. Thank you. Well, there's Tammy right there.
She is sitting nearly 6 feet behind me.
Very good. Glad to see that.
Are you sure that's just not a virtual background like Kendra uses?
That's right. It's a virtual. I have a photo of Tammy in my virtual background sitting behind me. That's awesome. Okay. Well, I want to thank the commissioners, Ray and Jill, for visiting with us. Or, Tim, are you ready to go? I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm stepping on your toe.
Let's give Commissioner Melton just another minute to join us. I see she is running a little bit late, but who knows what meeting she may have scheduled over the top of this. I don't. Doug, do you recall if she said anything about whether or not she would be with us today?
No, I don't recall it. No, that she was not going to be, no.
Okay. Let's just give her another minute or two, Todd, and then we'll get going. We could talk about my beard.
Good.
I was going to bring that up, but...
pretty nice looking, don't you think?
It is. I was going to ask...
That's the right answer, by the way, Todd.
I was going to ask if you were available to play Santa Claus at the annual Phippsburg Christmas party, should COVID regulations allow that. Would you be ready by December?
You know, I think actually, I'm not sure Santa Claus is the right role for me. I was thinking the Grim Reaper might be a better. But the beard is good because it goes along with my hair, which has not been cut for a long time. And I'm trying to convince my wife to cut it. She's not very enthusiastic about it. So I may just have to get out the clippers and just shear it all off. We'll see how that goes.
We would invite you to do that at the annual Route County Fair, have one of the kids take care of that. But since they're blow-and-go shows, we're not going to have that equipment at the fair this year.
That's too bad. I could, yeah, because those kids know how to handle a set of shears, don't they?
You bet.
All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and get started. I'm sure Beth has a good reason to not be with us right now. And I'm sure she'll be joining us shortly. But we've got everybody assembled. So, Todd, what have you got for us?
Well, and I appreciate Ray sending out the initial communication with you all. And just so you all know that Jill and Ray and Tammy and I have been working on these things together in advisement with the Fair Board. And as you might recollect, we came to here, I don't remember when that was, a month ago or thereabouts, and talked about the plans for the 2020 fair. And so we'd be back in front of you to kind of tell you what the refined plan looked like. We have a very detailed document that Tammy's been putting a lot of work into, multi-page document for mitigation planning that we will submit to CSU. Decided that maybe you all didn't need to know all those details. If you'd like a copy of that, we'd be more than happy to share that. But in the meantime, I did send you kind of a reduced one-page version via email here about 10 minutes ago. If you didn't get that, I can share my screen and show you what that looks like.
Go ahead and share the screen, Todd. We have it, but I think for the benefit of anybody that's watching, it would be good for you to share your screen.
Okay. Y'all seeing that?
Yep.
Great. Let me get you guys out of the way here. So note that in general, what we're asking everyone, and Jill, if you want to pipe up with anything, you know, in the middle of this, just jump in, okay? But the Fair Board, we talked about the Fair Board, and then primarily looking at this from a 4-H perspective as well. We're going to ask everyone, of course, as they come onto the fairgrounds to make sure they have self-screened. We will check people as they come through the main gate to make sure that they are asymptomatic, that they have self-screened, get them to agree to wear a mask, and have them sign off saying that that is the case, and then they will each get a wristband. So we'll know that they've been through that process as they come onto the fairgrounds. As we manage our shows, primarily since that is what the fair looks like. I've broken this down into different locations. Know that the multipurpose building, which of course is a very large building, is allowing us room to do these shows, even with some audience members present, but per state guidelines, we'll be dividing that into a performer area and an audience area. And that those areas are separated by a 25-foot buffer. Everyone in the audience will be required to wear masks. We believe we're trying to figure out exactly what the new mask order says in order for performers, whether the kids who are showing their animals will be required to wear masks or not. They are?
No.
They are not. That's why I thought. We're going to try to encourage those who want to do so, but you can imagine that showing an animal with a mask on could be challenging for some of those kids, especially swine. But we not only have that 25-foot space, but then there will be gated barriers between the spectator area and the performer area, so we can keep our numbers separate there. The bleachers will be placed to the very back of the wall to help maintain that spacing, and then there will be 6-foot spacing between the different family members. You can sit with your family and people you've been with, but of course other groups will have to maintain distancing. We will count those audience members in and out, since we can control which locations are coming into and out of, and note that we will disinfect bleachers, railings, and all those surfaces daily. Any questions on how we're going to handle things in the multi-purpose building?
Nope. Sounds like a pretty good plan, Todd.
Okay. The small animal barn. I'm sorry. And Doug, did you have any questions?
So, I guess you talk about sanitizing the once daily. So how's that happening? I know Kevin got some new fancy deal that, so how are you sanitizing whatever? And it sounds good. I appreciate that. It's all good. So how's the sanitation happening?
Great question, Doug. At this point in time, what we're looking at, of course, you know, Doug, you all have been in those bleachers. They get really dirty anyway. So we sweep those down every day, and we usually spray them down with a hose every night. This year, we will add that with a spray disinfectant solution of either bleach, or it looks like our fair board president, Mr. Dave Long, is ordered a lot of hospital-level disinfectant solution that the mine is actually going to be providing for us free of charge, which is a huge gift. They'll be donating that, and we'll put that in sprayers and be spraying down the entire bleacher area and the railings every night.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Beth, I'm sorry, I see you're on with us now. Did you have a question about multi-purpose building?
Yeah, I'm a minute late here. You just might want to double-check those mask rules, because our county rules apply, and they may or may not change before this, but if they're indoors, I believe they would be required to wear a mask. You just may want to confirm that before telling participants that they don't have to.
Well, it's just in the show ring. They wear it up to the show ring, and then in the show ring they'll take it off, and then they put it back on when they leave the show ring. But while showing an animal, if they need to be interacting with their animal, that mask could be a deterrent. Like if you're holding a big steer and you have that mask on, when at home you've been practicing without the mask. So we feel it's a safety concern for them, that they can choose to keep it on. But, you know, while you're interacting with large animals, you want as much as your expression working with your animal.
So I understand everything you're saying. I'm just stating that you probably need to confirm that is allowable under the rules. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just.
And who am I confirming that with?
That is one of the questions we had, Beth. And I don't know, given that we don't have a public health director at this point in time, who can we confirm the specifics of that language, the county ordinance with?
So typically, Todd, what we tell other people that have that question is to carefully read our public health order for yourself and try to make that determination. And if at that point you still can't, if you don't believe that is clear, then I guess we refer you to environmental health. Is that correct, Beth? Is that the path we've been taking? That's
right, except considering that this is a county, an event occurring in county facilities, I would think Eric would also be able to advise on what's allowed and not allowed. And I guess I would also say, we just have to follow our own rules. I don't disagree with what you're saying about whether this is problematic or not. But I wouldn't want us to be seen as creating exceptions to our own rules. And definitely if there's not a requirement to wear a mask, that's fine. But I was just encouraging that I'm not certain that interpretation is correct.
And you're right, Beth. We want to make sure that if we're telling others to do this, that we do. So we will clarify that and look at that rule and figure out how we can best work within that, okay?
Well, things have changed a little bit since you came up with your plan here, too, and the fact that the governor has now ordered his mask order. So this is applying to all the fairs. And so I'm sure you guys are all working together and figuring out how that's all working. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I do think it's possible that I don't know for sure, but we may amend our order wherein the state rules, you know, so we'll have to watch that, but I'm not even positive that this would be exempt under the state rules unless these kids are under the age of 10. I believe if they're indoors, they would I don't think we have to get into the weeds, but all I'm saying is I think you need to probably follow up and make sure that what you're doing is actually allowed under the
mask. The clarification for your purposes, Todd, is that yes, there is a statewide mask order and you should definitely read that. the most recent edict from the governor on mask wearing, but then understand that our public health order number 3 may even be slightly more restrictive than the state order. So even if it appears that under the state order you could proceed, you're going to need to read our public health order to ensure that you'd be in compliance with that.
Correct. We'll do that. And I will say that, and I've got it right here, I can share it with you all, but this is still in compliance with what the state has on their COVID website as of this moment, that performers are still a different category that can go without a mask. But we will confirm that then with the county public health order number 3.
So you need to do that right away, because Wednesday of next week, we are going to be considering extension of our public health order. And there's already at least one item in our public health order that Dr. Harrington may be making a recommendation to more closely align with the state order. And if there's some strong reason that we should approach this performance aspect the same way, you need to let us know as soon as possible.
I do think on this, just in regards to what you just said, Todd, those guidelines all were put up and put together before the governor issued the statewide mask order. And it's possible that they were not revised after that. I don't think we have to spend too much time in the weeds, but I would just encourage you to follow up and make sure that given this, especially the new statewide order, that nothing has changed there.
Okay, thank you. And we know this has been a moving target. We've made some changes as we've gone along. So of course, we're just presenting to you the best of our knowledge right now. I should have prefaced it with that.
Y'all are every day, Todd, just the best we know right now.
That's right.
It's the news of the today, of what we're doing today.
Sometimes it doesn't even last all day.
Yes, we have entered a new time dimension. I don't know if you remember the old Twilight Zone series, but different space and time.
Exactly right. Well, the next version, I'll put an asterisk by this that says all information subject to change daily.
Take it hourly.
Hourly, that's right. Well, we'll go on a small animal barn. A small animal barn, of course, is a smaller space, which means we can't have as many people. But the luxury of the small animal barns, we've had this set up for several years, that the kids show just inside the building and all the spectators are outside anyway. So we should be able to maintain distancing, no problem. And we can have everybody watch from outside. Horse shows, the outdoor arena, we're not worried about that. If you've got a horse in hand, you are, by virtue of the activity, more than 6 feet away from someone. One of the easiest ways to socially distance. Our restroom facilities, we've been working on this. Jill, thankfully, has been working with Ray a lot on this as well. Note that we have, it looks like we now have a contract for professional janitorial services for the shower house and exhibit hall. Jill, you're nodding. I don't know if there's anything to add on that.
No, we're good. We're actually using Best Cleaning Company, and so we're able to kind of use the contract professional services agreement that's already in place, knowing that the rate will be different, but we are good to go with that.
And again, I want to thank Jill and Ray both for working hard on that. Last night we did have the Fair Board made a recommendation to move forward with contract with Twin Enviro to take care of the Port-a-Johns. They will be coming in and doing their regular servicing, but on top of that, we will be doing disinfecting nightly. With those, we do have hand sanitizers in each port-a-john and hand washing stations, not only the porta-potties, but the entrances to the multi-purpose building as well, so people can wash their hands and take care of that way. I should note, too, that it's not in this simplified version, but the in-depth version that Tammy's been working on, she's gone to great lengths to make sure that as each kid has registered for FAIR, we have captured from each kid the number one family member that will be attending FAIR with them. So we have that information, and that should guidelines allow, and we're able to have larger audiences up to three or four other family members they'd want to have come watch them. And we've made that expectation that when your class is on, people can come in and watch. When your class is off, everybody goes back outside, and we'll switch that way through entry and exit. Again, keeping those numbers and then confirming that those people are on our list of people that the kids wanted to come watch. So nothing's open to the general public. My last point there, junior livestock sale is completely online, so we have no mitigation plan for that because that is the plan. We've mitigated by going 100% online with that. Other questions?
So, you guys will be filling out the self-certification form and submitting that to public health 15 days prior to the event?
As staff, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are running the events, correct? So just like any other organizer of an event, there's a requirement that you fill out our self-certification form. For the event, it's available online. If you go to our COVID-19 website and scroll down, there's a link where you click on and fill out that self-certification plan, which I think you've probably already done all of the work necessary, but you do need to fill out that form and submit it.
Okay, thanks for that reminder.
It's easy, Todd. It's just saying, I know the rules and I'm going to follow them. And here's how many people are expected at my event.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll take you 5 or 10 minutes to fill it out. So.
And I guess the question I'd have is, Jill will probably need to do that. We'll need to do that. How far that, do 4-H volunteers need to sign that as well? Or is it just, it's just us, correct?
I think it's just you, Todd.
Okay.
One person. As the organizer.
Okay.
I agree.
Or Jill or whomever.
I think it might be both.
Jill, those goes. Sorry, Jill.
It's not hard.
So I have a question. So you guys have done a great job and appreciate the limiting the participation to one family member in the show, in the the eventee, the piece. So are you guys lining up some Zoom meetings or somebody to, so that there can be some remote access of the shows themselves, so that, you know, our objective here, our objective is to not decrease attendance or decrease visual representation, but to just not have people there. So I hope that it, and whether you guys are working on something that we could have, you know, I mean, a steer show. I mean, somebody should be just being able to capture that on a tape and put it right straight onto a Zoom lead. And the same thing with small animals and the rest. So anyhow, I was hoping that we could do something like that, that would allow us to everybody feel better that we still had the fair and we were limiting participation to one family member per kid. So thank you.
Doug, we actually were saying immediate family, so we're not limiting it to one. We're saying because we're able to kick them out of the barn and let other people in, we don't want to go that far down. We have the ability to send people outside. So we've said immediate family, so parents, but not grandparents, you know. And then we are live streaming all of the shows on Zoom. So that'll be available for, and hopefully the newspaper will get it out so anybody can click on it, you know, get the word out.
Well, that sounds great. That's what I wanted to hear. Yep. So the live Zoom, I think, will be perfect, man.
And Doug, I should have been clearer on that one family member. We're planning, and that's what we captured, who do you want to come to fair? And that's who, at this point in time, we're planning on them bringing to fair. But the reason we captured the one family member is that should we have an additional outbreak and numbers get tighter, we have that in our back pocket that we can go, we can say, okay, if we can only have one person, who's that one person? That's the worst case scenario.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Yep. And I don't know if Jill or Ray has anything to add.
I'm going to do an updated budget number from what was sent in with the communications form. We kind of finalized our budget last night. So excluding personnel and overhead, we're looking at an expense of $13,960 and revenue of $14,700. So kind of like in the years past, with the exception of personnel and overhead, all these costs are covered.
Tammy's back here saying, and she's right, we need to thank all of our sponsors, but especially thank President Long, Dave Long, for the Fair Board, for bringing in two headlining sponsors, one to the tune of $6,000 and one to the tune of $7,500. Hill Petroleum and Master Petroleum are really making this possible.
I don't have any questions. I want to just thank you guys and the Fair Board for working on this. Obviously, this is it's a tough thing. It's a tough year, and just really appreciate you all being flexible and adapting and figuring out how to keep supporting our kids and 4-H efforts in a positive way. I'm glad to hear you'll be live streaming the shows. I may be able to watch more of them than I typically do. I think that will be great.
Yeah, thank you, you guys. Echo Commissioner Melton's comments.
And if anyone wants to bring me anything for the sweet and spicy competition, I would be happy to judge it. You want to do a remote at home, taste at home? Do you want to do a taste at home sweet and spicy competition?
That would be nice.
I always like the beer tasting myself, but
anyway. All right, Doug will take the beer. Clark and I will help with the sweet and spicy.
I'll do the cookies. Great. How's everything else going on out there, Jill? Pretty quiet, huh?
We're doing good. We actually, Jimmy was able to be here all week last week, and we got caught up pretty good on the mowing. For the most part, he's fishing in Idaho this week. But the weed department was out here also and got quite a bit done. So we're getting better, looking much better out here. And we got one of those English horse shows, the Snowmelt Schooling Horse Show this weekend. Cregan Ortner, we've dealt with her several times. She does a great job. And we're also prepping for Buck Brannaman at the end of August, which most of his shows have been canceled. So we're looking forward to that one.
Great. All right. We are running just a little bit behind schedule. So if there's nothing else for the folks at the fair, I think we should.
One quick question, Mr. Chairman. So we need to submit this much larger plan to CSU, and in it, it says that our plans have been approved by the county commissioners. Do we take this as approval, and so we can move forward with CSU? I don't think CSU is going to be particular that they need to see the minutes of the meeting that you've approved this, but I would like a head nod anyway that we're able to continue as planning.
I guess we would just need to add the caveat as it complies with whatever current county and state regulations in effect at the time. Then I would say yes. So just
I would agree, and I would think that CSU will be looking at the state rules and making sure that people are doing things that are in compliance with those.
So yeah, I would, if we need to send you a letter to accompany that, Todd, we could do that, either that or Mark could do that. You know, and again, I'm thumbs up. So yeah, so I think all of us are thumbs up. So if whatever verification or documentation you need to have to do that we've presented and concurred, you presented and we concurred with your work efforts.
Yeah, if you could get something like that drafted up and with that caveat in there about complying with whatever the current regulations are, and then Kendrick could send it to me and I could put my signature on it, scan it, send it back to you, even today.
I appreciate it. I don't know that any of that's necessary. We'll check with CSU. I think they just want to make sure we've had this conversation. We have. We're all good.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much
for your time.
Thanks.
Okay, Julie, you're up. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Not a problem. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you. That's great. What have you got for us?
We are here to request the Board of County Commissioners approve the award for the Rout County Justice Center membrane roof replacement to CRW Inc. in the amount of $220,780. We also request the BCC chair sign the notice of award and authorization for the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order. So we went out for an RFP to 9 vendors and received 7 proposals. However, only 2 of them met all the detailed specifications of the RFP. But one of those had unacceptable exception clauses that was not of the best value to the county. They didn't want to do any liquidated damages or be responsible for any of the interior damage that might be caused by removing the roof. So the detailed bids tabulation was attached to your package. And at first glance, CRW appears to be the second highest bid, but it is the one that met all the specifications for our warranty, especially taking it to a 20-year warranty rather than the 10-year that we had on the original roof, and up to 55 miles per hour of wind damage. So we definitely recommend also CRW because one of the unknowns in this project is how much damage has occurred to the insulation. So we asked for a separate price and on replacing that as we remove the roof and find out how much damage is actually in there. And CRW was the lowest proposal of $1.95 per square foot to amend that situation, as compared with $6.50 at the next proposal that was actually, well, it had the exceptions, but it did have the warranty issues that we wanted. So that's why we are recommending CRW Inc. We feel we've done our due diligence. They are ready to get started August 3rd, and we'll definitely be able to complete the project prior to snowfall.
Questions?
I'm sorry if I missed your explanation about the protest letter.
Is that just wanted you to be aware that Douglas Colony was the one that had the exceptions, and they did file a protest immediately, and we responded with a letter through Mark Collins, and they have removed that protest.
Okay, great.
So we're all set there. We're legally fine to move forward. Part of the explanation we gave them was they did the original roof, and when it came time that we were having these leaks due to the mats being installed improperly originally, it was just out of warranty, and Steve had a very hard time getting them to even come back and fix what was there. They ran out of time in October by the time they finally got on the job site, and more damage was caused over the ensuing winter. So we didn't really want to get back into that situation.
Okay, thank you.
Any cost for replacement of the insulation would be in excess of the proposed expenditure, is that correct?
I think they built in around 500 square feet. But, you know, there's the potential for more. So
Okay. We'll
see how that goes. Hopefully it's not as bad as what we can imagine. So,
any comments from Public Works regarding this?
I don't have any. Steve, did you have any comments? If you do, Steve, you need to unmute.
I can hear him in his office.
Well, I'm telling him to speak loudly.
Yeah, tell him to yell.
I'll knock on the wall.
Go ahead, Steve. He's unmuted himself, but he still doesn't have anything to say. So
he's on the phone and on the screen, so I don't know what's going on.
Well, yeah, his computer doesn't have a mic or a
hello.
There you are. Hi, Steve.
There. Okay. So we had 500 square feet of insulation in the base bid to be replaced, and that was based on we were able to isolate where our leaks were coming through. So hopefully we have that part covered. The other thing I want to say, this is a no dollar limit warranty. 20-year no dollar limit warranty. So that's a good deal for the county.
Okay. Any further questions, comments, commissioners?
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Steve. So the insulation repair, is that like fiber or fiberglass insulation, or is that spray on foam, or is that and so the water evidently damaged that. So that's what we're replacing.
Well, yeah, the insulation that's in place underneath the membrane is two layers of rigid polyiso insulation. So it's a hard board. So we know it's taken on some damage. We're having a pre-construction meeting next week, and we're going to do some infrared scanning of the roof to see if we can determine, feel comfortable about, you know, which areas definitely are going to need to be replaced.
And so, and again, I apologize. I don't need to know this, but I'm curious. So what determines whether it's damaged or whatever is that, I mean, the deterioration of the board then?
Yeah, it's a visual inspection, Doug. And we also have a professional roofing consultant firm working with us on this project. They're going to be performing the infrared scan and they'll be at the pre-bid or the pre-construction conference as well.
Okay. Yeah, at risk of getting into the weeds, now you have my interest. What's the purpose of an infrared scan? As you peel back the old membrane, you'll obviously have the opportunity to visually inspect the entire status of the rigid insulation.
Well, the infrared scan is because the roofing consultant will not be on site every single day. So we want to set what we believe are the problem areas and as visual inspections, as we peel back existing membrane, the visual inspections will be determine what else needs to be replaced.
Yeah, so presumably you have a good roofing contractor that's going to bring to your attention if they see something that's questionable.
Absolutely, and I'm going to be up on the site daily, Tim.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Yes.
Any other questions, comments?
I'd like to say for the record that I have no interest in getting into the weeds. All my questions have been answered.
Yep, you're welcome to come up off and join our pre-construction meeting if you want.
It's a really fun stairway you have to go up through the
pole. Tim gave me a hard hat, so I'm ready for anything, Steve.
All right, we'll make sure we have OSHA-approved scaffold set up for you.
All right. Actually, Commissioner Melton, I think your input into this process might best be served by providing a motion to approve.
Sounds good. I will have you know that there are lots of pictures of me helping my dad finish the basement when I was 7. So it's not like I know nothing about these things.
Oh, I was not trying to make that inference. I was just pointing out what you're best suited for.
Oh, it's all good. Thanks, Tim. All right, Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the award for the Rout County Justice Center membrane roof replacement to CRW Inc. in the amount of $220,780 and authorize you to sign the notice of award and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, all those say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So we'll go on to our daily dose of COVID-19. Mark, do you have anything you want to update us on? I know that I'm looking forward to hear from Beth. If you can give us an update about the CCAT meeting yesterday and some talk about ski areas, but Mark, why don't you go first?
Commissioner, I really don't have anything aside from what I discussed yesterday. And of course, we've got a meeting at 11 o'clock this morning that will be related to the COVID issue. And with that, I'll just defer to Beth and her comments on her recent meeting.
Do you want me to talk about the CCAT meeting yesterday? Is that what you're asking, Tim?
Yep.
And actually I had a meeting after the CCAT meeting that was particularly helpful as well, which involved Rob Perlman and some other representatives from the Steamboat ski area, which was great, and helped enlighten some of what we talked about. So Jill joined us, and Jill Ryan, and there were a few different discussions. One was about how positive tests for travelers and tourists might be counted. And there wasn't really any resolution, just it's a question that a lot of these different counties have about that. And then I feel like there were three items of note we talked about. Was there one other besides the ski area, Tim? I'm trying to remember now.
Yeah, there was some mostly irrelevant talk about school district enrollment.
Oh yeah, that was really interesting. I mean, it wasn't necessarily irrelevant, but the question was, people are, these resort areas are noticing that they have second homeowners who are planning to stay and enroll their kids in school. And in some places that's expected to create some strain on the school systems. And there was some concern that that was gonna cause the school district to have to operate virtually because they don't have enough space for all those extra kids. So that was somewhat interesting, I thought. Actually, it was interesting that question, that comment came from Gunnison County. And so they just are having a lot of fun with second homeowners over in Gunnison County. I don't know if you saw the article in the Colorado Sun about the pack that's being formed in Gunnison County of second homeowners trying to overturn some of the seats on the board of county commissioners.
Yep.
Did you notice Trudy Bader, Tim?
Pardon?
You remember Trudy Bader?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I met and talked to Trudy several times.
And did you see that she's one of the candidates?
Yeah, I did.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember her. She wasn't here very long.
No, 1 year. She served 1 year.
Okay.
In any case, the upshot of the conversation was the two former school board members that were present understood that two things. One, that the school districts really can't turn someone away. If someone is physically living in the school district, then the school district needs to offer them a space to be educated. And the other thing is, it's not like they're doing it for free, because the school operating revenues are based upon a formula that ensures they receive X number of dollars for every student that's sitting in a seat on the October count date. So it just is what it is for those school districts.
I thought it was interesting too, though, because I mean, I know here, and I'm sure in some of these places, there are parents who are planning to pay a lot of money to have sort of private homeschool. I don't know how many, but I know that's a fear of some of the school districts, is that that's going to take revenue away from them. And so this may actually end up being a benefit to the school districts in that their enrollment a little steady.
So. But again, it's not like there's anything to be done or not be done. It is what it is. So.
But I thought that was an interesting conversation. And then the last thing was really, it wasn't even a follow-up. It actually came up by a totally different commissioner. You know, Thomas is the one who had called me, but somebody else brought it up. I think Roland, is that his name?
Roland Mason?
Yeah, from Gannon. Yeah. I don't really know him, but he brought it up, but then everybody was kind of in agreement. Just this same conversation about the need for consistency among ski areas on a statewide basis in terms of what they're doing and the rules they're following. And you guys remember I shared with you that Commissioner Davidson had called me to talk about that. And it came up on this meeting as well. And it was interesting because the first question was to Jill, like, hey Jill, is the state working on ski areas yet? And her answer was basically no, which while not terribly surprising given how much they have to do is a little bit disconcerting because we don't really want those rules to just come out at the last minute. But generally there was widespread agreement among that group, which really was commissioners representing the majority of counties that have ski areas in the state, and definitely the ones that have major ski areas. Although Pitkin wasn't there yesterday, they would be the only ones, that we do want to work together and make sure that there are consistent rules for ski areas across the state and consistent operating procedures. There was an acknowledgement of the fact that skiing itself doesn't really pose much of a health risk at all, a public health risk. There's plenty of risks to skiing, but not spreading COVID. You know, you're outside. It's more bringing all the people in, and it's the, you know, on mountain activities other than skiing that present some of the risk. The follow-up, I Kara was great and had already arranged a meeting. She has a regular meeting, I think, with some of the ski area folks, and she invited me, and it just happened to be yesterday. Rob Perlman shared, and he said I could share this information, that the National Ski Area Association is working on putting together a playbook of reopening, kind of like what we saw from the lodging folks. Remember, they shared with us that those national safe reopening guidelines that the hotels had developed. So they're kind of trying to do the same thing on a national basis. And he said he got a draft of that just yesterday from them. So there's already some coordinated action happening between the ski areas. And he was definitely really interested in the concept of pulling health departments, commissioners into that conversation. And again, making sure everybody is kind of on the same page and is comfortable with what the requirements are. You know, I indicated that I didn't think Rout County would be particularly interested in, you know, trying to impose a bunch of restrictions on the ski area, but I can imagine Summit County being interested in doing that, for example. And I think it's to everyone's benefit if we all just are on the same page and there's consistency in what those rules are. I think that'll be good. And Rob was really interested in helping try to make some, you know, bring some people to the table. He was really interested in Steamboat being open about, you know, what their plans are and sharing with the community and some of those kinds of things. So I think both of those were good conversations. And I think everybody's pretty much in agreement that there's a benefit to us all having these conversations in advance and not just waiting for the governor to develop some rules and see if we like them or not.
Yeah, and I think there was also some, a little bit of frustration exhibited about potentially the influence of Vail Resorts over the governor's office, and that the conversation needed to be wider and include all of the various ski resorts, including the smaller ones like Powderhorn and Purgatory and even Crested Mountain, even though it's owned by Vail Resorts, is really considered a smaller ski area. And there was some open worry about potentially someone like Vail making a determination that certain of the smaller properties, it might just not be worth opening them at all, which of course is a business decision that is their decision to make. But we kind of need to make sure that any rules that are crafted won't disadvantage any particular ski areas.
So I think I followed up with Julia after, and she was really interested in just helping to pull all that together. That CCAT group already does have a follow-up meeting with, I always forget their name, the Ski Country, Colorado Ski Country, whatever their name is, which is the Ski Area Association. They basically represent everyone except Vail. And we already have a follow-up with them scheduled in August. And so I think Julia was considering that we would kind of leverage that and have a little bit more formal agenda to actually maybe have some opportunity to review these safe reopening guidelines, which will be done from the National Ski Area Association by then, and just have some conversation. And then Thomas was really, and I don't disagree with him, interested in trying to figure out, and what do we do when there are outbreaks, and what do we do if we need to try to control outbreaks? Because all of us have a vested interest in these ski areas being able to continue to operate. You know, it's a real challenge. It's not just them, it's all the other businesses in town, you know. And so we do want to all really be having a conversation about kind of that worst case scenario too, and what that looks like. And again, have everybody on the same page as much as we can, on a statewide basis. But I was gratified to hear from Rob that there's already kind of some mitigation and reopening plans being developed. I think it's the other pieces that are a challenge Because again, it's not the skiing that's potentially not safe. You know, it's all the other stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah. Well, good.
There has to be some, a little bit of safety concern on the lift, you know, even if you're bundled up and the rest, especially the gondola where you're enclosed. And so, I mean, I totally understand that they only have X amount of area that is their turf to take care of, but it's the whole bigger picture too, is what you're doing here and the entertainment and the restaurants and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Well, in fairness, getting into a gondola car is less than a 10-person gathering.
But it's a pretty tight space too. Pretty close to those other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guess is they'll be loading them, you know, one party per car, which will slow things down. I also think they're probably, I don't know, but I'm guessing probably looking at reservation systems as an option for sure. Some of those kinds of things.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. One of the nuances, I can't remember who brought it up, but that they Sylvan County had to do that for when they reopened the, which ski area?
A Basin.
When they opened up A Basin, and there's some odd requirement that the Forest Service has that that at least 10% of ticket sales be walk-up ticket sales. So, you know, and actually, Beth, that reminds me. I thought of that yesterday. Is that any kind of a conversation about how the ski area is going to be operating locally and statewide really needs to include Forest Service. We need to make sure that Tara Humphreys is invited to any of those meetings.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, that's great to think about too. You know, the other thing, this is interesting. What I'm hearing from the restaurants is that they're having some staffing challenges. That, like, they're, even with the unemployment rate, they're just aren't enough people who stayed in town to keep the restaurants fully staffed. So I don't know what that's going to mean for ski season, especially if the president continues on with trying to limit visas. And I mean, it'll be interesting. And then the other thing Rob said is they're learning a lot from summer, right? So they're realizing they really have to cohort their staff. Because if they have everybody interacting and, you know, then if one person gets sick, then the number of people they have to have in quarantine sort of hamstrings their operations. And so they think about how they kind of cohort people so they're not interacting with more people. I think employee housing is also going to be a huge issue, not just here, but I think in all of these. I mean, the way they house employees is pretty risky for a COVID type of situation too. So I don't know, there's a lot to think about for sure, but I would say Rob is awesome. And I think we're really fortunate to have the good relationship that we do with the ski area. I think quite frankly, the folks that have to deal with Vail are in a little bit different boat. And I think we're really fortunate to have the leadership we do here.
Well, good. I think safe to say that the getting the ski area opened come ski season is one of the things that just really has to happen. I mean, after all of the impacts we've had on the economy, the concept that the ski area wouldn't be able to reopen or be operating at such a tiny fraction of its normal capacity supports a lot of the things that we've done for public health to do what we can to keep our disease prevalence down so that when we get to the ski season, we're not dealing with a large outbreak and get backed into the corner where we may just not be able to open. So keep our fingers crossed.
For sure.
It starts with the healthy community and our base community for sure. So
yeah,
absolutely.
On a side note, on Monday, I have a 12 p.m. YVAHA special meeting that I need to go to. So hopefully our agenda for Monday will be done by noon. Otherwise, I'll just have to leave early on Monday.
I think we've been scheduling to be done by noon. So yeah. Hopefully you just got to keep things in line, Tim.
I know. But I have these other commissioners that keep asking questions and making comments that really slows things down. But right now, you're welcome. You've got lots of time right now before our next item. We've got another 30 minutes we could choose to use to talk about COVID-19 related items, or we could just take a break until 11 o'clock.
So two things. I have a question about the schedule tomorrow is the first thing.
Okay.
So that opioid settlement meeting that CCI, you know, emailed Eric that they were volunteering me for because somehow they think I'm going to be really good at lobbying the AG's office. Remember that? So that meeting is tomorrow at 10. And I saw that that is when we're getting updates from our industry work groups. So I guess I feel okay about just maybe watching the recording of that afterwards, since it really is just an update from them. I mean, I do want to hear their updates, but I think that will be, I'll be able to be sufficiently updated just with follow-up. So,
yeah, I agree. You should be here for the industry group update.
Sorry, I meant the other way around.
Really?
Go to the opioid meeting and watch the industry update, but I'm happy to skip the opioid meeting and follow up with Swartow off afterwards too.
I guess I'm curious, just what kind of influence does anybody perceive we or a county commissioner from Route County would have over a global opioid settlement?
I think it's more that they're trying to pull together some commissioners who are going to advocate to the Attorney General's office about how the opioid settlement money is allocated. But, you know, this meeting tomorrow isn't the last, you know, it's just the initial conversation about it. I don't really care about getting roped into this, but they did specifically ask me. So, I could do whatever. It sounds like you, I mean, I agree that there would be value in me being here in the industry updates, and I could also follow up with Swartow after. But either way, I don't know. Do you guys have an opinion about that? I don't really even understand from the opioid side.
Kendra's was part of this, the class action suits. And, I don't know what,
we need to get our $3, Doug.
And Eric, I'm this is another one of those big legal things, and trying to figure out how we fit into it. And hell, I can't even figure out how we pencil in the numbers and figure out what our damages are, So and who gets the damages. So, it's all that stuff is.
It's more about like being a team player with CCI, since they seem to think somehow that my participation would be beneficial. But I can definitely just let Swartow know that's in the middle of our meeting and that I will catch up with him afterwards and he can let me know how I can be helpful. So I think I'll do that. All right.
Yeah. Use your best judgment. We're fine either way.
Yeah. Thanks for your thoughts on that. I would like to be here. Thanks for helping me think about that. We had talked about me maybe giving you guys answering some questions for you about the Protect Our Neighbors planning grant. If you guys have had some time to look at that, I think we could do that. And if you haven't, I think it would be better if you did have time to look at it before we talked about it. So I don't know.
I read through both of your attachments.
Okay. Did you look at it, Doug?
And they're fine. I have no problem. It's some good work that you've done there, and I think it's a good outline and a good way to proceed forward. I don't know exactly how I would approach divvying up the dollars, but is that kind of the way we want to approach this conversation, is to try to come up with a dollar number to assign to each one of those items?
I have no idea. I mean, I need to look a little more at the grant rules, but I don't know. I mean, I think as long as you guys are all right with what's in the planning activities, I mean, my preference would be that as much of that as possible goes to support staff time. And then any place we don't feel like we have the staff capacity would go to some kind of contractor position. But honestly, I think it's going to be based on looking at the rules for the grant about how much flexibility, I told you guys this yesterday, about how much flexibility we might have in kind of moving those dollars between line items, you know, how much analysis we actually have to do right now.
You got five activities and each one's going to cost about $10,000. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at. What do you think, Doug?
You know, I told you yesterday, it's our money anyhow, but anyhow, so.
Yeah, I know. Good.
So
we just have to beg them for our money.
I hate to do backwards handstands to get $50,000 either. So for something that we need to determine whether we want to do and that we want to do and then how we do it and do it ourselves. Like I said, I'm not into one of those things that, well, yeah, just doing a project just to get the grant dollars. And so, I think we all agreed, you know, we want to head toward this and this will be in the long-term benefit of it. So again, the more flexibility they have with the, and we ought to insist on it, the flexibility of the $50,000, because that's probably a drop in the bucket of what we're actually going to be spending, which will end up being our CARES money that we're going to be propping up the whole thing with. So, when they start waving the $50,000, okay, well, good. Thank you. We'll see. But so I guess we follow up, but I do think we need to come up with, you know, you've created a great start here and how we can figure out aligning some specific tasks and things that, and how we're going to do them will help us a bunch and then figure out how the, and again, you know, we're going to spend way over $50,000 on this, even in a,
maybe not for planning. I mean, I think the $50,000 is probably quite a bit of money for just planning activities. And so I kind of wonder, Beth, if in the grant request, if a simple enough statement couldn't be made that, you know, we have not determined exactly how we would allocate all of this money. And I, at the bottom of your planning activities page, you had the budget items. You could say that, we think it will cost $50,000 for funding these three different things, or if we want to call it five different things. And maybe you can find out, there's been a number of communities that actually have already submitted for these planning grants.
I don't think we have to have to overthink it too much. I mean, when I look at their suggested budget category, they're pretty broad. It's staffing and personnel expenses, meeting expenses and supplies, contracts, other direct costs, and then we can bill for indirect costs. And that's it. Those are their suggested categories. And so as long as you guys are all right with the planning activities that have been proposed, I think the only question mark is just the breakdown between money that would go to staff and money that would go to contractors. And in my mind, there's really kind of two big activities. One is more of the public health, epidemiological, infectious disease type of analysis that needs to be done in terms of creating the surge plan and some of those kinds of things. And then there's kind of this engagement with community partners concept. And those are really, while I've broken it into these five activities, those are really the two buckets, you know, that we're talking about in terms of actual activities and costs. And I could imagine there being a portion that staff would do. And then I can also imagine engaging with some kind of contractor to fill the gaps in terms of the time and expertise that's needed. And so I don't think it's that hard to just kind of ballpark what that's going to look like. And especially considering that we really just have to use those broad budget categories that are being suggested.
Yeah, I think I agree. Let's not overthink it. They'll let you know right away if they're not, if they don't like your level of detail, and we can go back and flesh it out some more if necessary.
Yeah, my only, so I want to just make sure that you guys are all right with what's been proposed there.
Yep, I am. I thought it was well done.
Did you have any comments, Doug?
No, I'm fine, yep.
Okay, and then the other question is just county process. I know we have that grants committee. I don't know if we feel like this needs to be reviewed by some other folks within the county, just on the administrative side, to make sure, I mean, before it's submitted, or if we want to have it on the back end that someone reviews the agreement. I mean, this just isn't the type of thing I'm typically involved with. So I just want to make sure that we follow the right process to get this done. I think if we weren't in the middle of a public health director transition, we would just have the director do this, but that's not where we are. So I think we need to just do what's needed. So I just want to know, I don't know really, is there a need to run this by members to make sure we understand the requirements?
So Mark, are you familiar? Oh, Eric's going to weigh in, I think. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, yeah, we do have a grant review policy. And so it requires that grant applications be reviewed by the committee prior to submittal.
Okay.
And then afterwards, typically afterwards, sometimes we have the agreement at this stage already, and I can review that, but more typically the agreement will come after the fact, and then legal will review that as well.
So this is a little tricky because applying for it is actually just a Google form, and I can't even see all the questions without submitting the answers. So if I just have an outline of it, I guess I just don't know what that committee needs to review, Eric. I mean, what are the important things to provide to that committee for their review?
The first question always is there any federal money involved? And you may not know that without looking into it.
It's CARES Act money. So yes, the answer is yes.
Obviously, how much, if there's a match required, if you can't print the application, I guess just send out an email to Dan, myself, and Mark, and give us what you can.
Okay, that sounds good. I will do that.
Yeah, could you re-forward that to me? Because I have this talking points on Protect Our Neighbor, but I don't know that I had the one thing you sent, and I can't find it again.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's so many emails, Doug. I'll resend it, and I'll include the link to the grant application, too, in case you want to take a look at that.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yeah.
No problem. Okay, thanks, Eric.
So who's administering this? Is CDPHE administering this, or is DOLA administering it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I thought it was DOLA for some reason, but now I think, now I'm questioning that. It's not clear whether it's DOLA or CDPHE. Oh no, here we go. So grant approval will be determined by an award committee convened by CDPHE. So yeah, sounds like it's CDPHE. And I guess in that review process, I would find out what our indirect costs, our approved indirect cost rate is, or do we not? I'll just include that question to Dan, whether there should be an indirect cost line or not, and if so, what our approved rate is.
So, and again, I guess remembering here, was there a, is this a 50%
No, there's no match.
No match. So
there's a big one. There's a big $300,000 deal where you can qualify for $150,000.
Yeah.
With a $150,000 match for infrastructure.
Yeah, that's the infrastructure building grant. This planning grant is just straight up $50,000.
So I would imagine that we can spend the $50,000 without even considering and thinking about the indirect costs. So I mean,
yeah,
we probably have enough direct costs that we don't need to go through the brain damage. So
I just don't know. So I'll just include that question to Dan. I my understanding has been that we don't typically include indirect costs when we apply for grants. Is that?
Yeah, I think, like what Doug said, even if we did, let's keep it simple.
Okay.
Okay. Robin, do you have anything for us? Apparently not. She's shaking her head. Very good. Well, we can just hit the pause button here and work on a few other things, and I'll keep my link open. If anybody starts hollering, I'll come back on. But I guess
we need to wait until 11, Tim.
I guess that'd be the question. Do we actually need to wait until 11 o'clock? We're not obviously not having any public comment or public participation. I suppose that it would be all right to just move into our executive session at this time.
I have a quick question aside from that first. I forwarded over you guys a draft letter about some potential legislation regarding oil reclamation.
So Doug, I think I am interested in signing on. I was trying to do a little research and just make sure that there wasn't something I didn't know about, but it sounds good. Who is this firm that sent it over? Who are those guys?
So they're just a lobby firm. And again, they're actually,
they're
not lobbying for, as you can quite tell, they're not lobbying for the oil and gas industry. They're lobbying for, the environmental causes and making sure that, there's, and again, I'm very aware. So Gaspar Paragone is a local resident that, it's used to be local and now he's back here, but he works for a Denver lobbyist firm. But Bennett is working on this legislation to potentially up the ante on reclamation. And so I think it's a responsible letter and a responsible approach. I mean, and back in the days, we'll reclaim that well when we get the royalties out of the next well. So, and now when we're talking about $32 oil and the rest, and then we're having bankruptcies, and that's been our concern all along at the Route County when we were having any of these reclamation, is to actually get some dollars, to re-actually get boots on the ground and get reclamation done. So this is just a letter. So I guess we don't need to decide right now, but I did. He called me a couple weeks ago and asked about it and then sent it to me and I forwarded it on. But I think it's a responsible thing with, especially with the oil and the gas industry right now, and the potential bankruptcy, and then, especially drilling on federal lands and then, walking away and not having the money to reclaim those things. So,
yeah, there's a couple of examples of that just on the other side of the Route County line in Rio Blanco County of a couple of abandoned wells that do not look good. I can tell you, it's pretty much a mess. And you can bet that those guys are never coming back. The operator is a real small time operator. So they're not.
Yeah. I think in short of what you sent us, I read it and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But I'm just always want to do a little research and make sure there's not something I don't know, when a lobbyist approaches and asks for support. So
Gaspar must be Gaspar Paragone Jr. His dad was a federal judge for a number of years. Must be Roger's brother.
No, Gaspar's Roger's son.
Oh, okay. And it's Roger's dad that was the federal judge.
Supreme, yes. I thought he was a state court
judge. No, I think he was just a federal circuit court judge.
But anyhow, so
what's the timeline on that? Because I think I'm interested, but like I said, I just want to do some due diligence on it. It's, when it comes to oil and gas, it's just so complicated, and I just like to make sure to do research before signing on to these things.
No, that's all good. So why don't we try to figure out how, you know, in 10 days, you know, so yeah, it's the act of Congress, you know, so it can take forever. So
5 or 6 years, they might do it, right?
So we could probably, if you could check around now that you got the letter and the thought about it and the rest, and why don't we try to get it on the agenda? We'll try to get the draft on the agenda. And you had the email from Gasper. If you want to talk to him a little bit about it as well, that would be fine.
And you know, I'm going to check in with Roger Steen. He has been kind of all over this issue of the abandoned wells and see what he knows. I'm surprised he hasn't already contacted me about it. He might be out of town. So,
well, I was kind of surprised by this was even surfacing right now, but again, I guess, you know, it's, I don't know. It would only apply to new wells. I mean, there's no way you can come back. I can't imagine that you can go back on wells that are already out there drilled and whatever and impose new rules on those wells that were already drilled. So
no, but at least we ought to be doing it on new wells. I mean, even if we can't go back and fix the old ones.
So. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good. Anything else before we proceed to our executive session? And then, Mark, were we going to, yeah, go ahead.
I do have just one additional piece of information that I think is very encouraging. And I want to state it certainly for the benefit of the commissioners, but also to also provide some really indebtedness to the city of Steamboat Springs. Tim, you asked the other day when we have had, right now it appears as many as 7 volunteers from the city of Steamboat Springs that's going to help us with various COVID-related activities, i.e. when we do testing, when we engage in our monitoring education compliance efforts, you asked the question whether or not they would volunteer or be paid. And in my meeting yesterday afternoon with City Manager Suter, he stated that they would be paid. And not only will they be paid, commissioners, but also he said, if you need them in an additional capacity and it engages in overtime, he said, we will pay that as well. So that is really encouraging news. I thank Gary profusely for that assistance on the part of the city of Steamboat Springs. And boy, that is really good news to help boost our efforts going forward. So you may recall the conversation that Scott had with us about trying to stretch out those hours and the times that we can engage in the education, monitoring, compliance. This gives us that much more flexibility to do just that, whether it be on a weekend, whether it maybe be later in the evening and so forth. It's just really encouraging news. And again, commissioners, I just want to express our appreciation to the city of Steamboat for stepping up as a very strong partner.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to hear, Mark. It's been interesting over the years since I've been a commissioner to watch our relationship with the city of Steamboat develop from what it once was to what it is now. Obviously, getting through the CLEF project and still maintaining an amicable relationship was quite an accomplishment. And then you participated in those allocation discussions of the CARES money, and again, an amicable resolution out of all of that. So yeah, I'm gratified to see that the city is ready to pitch in where they can.
Mark, can you clarify for me or just confirm? So they'll support with kind of the monitoring and education efforts that Scott's office has been doing, as well as some staffing as needed for our community test sites. Is that right?
That's correct, Beth, for both. And yeah, probably more of the education monitoring compliance piece than the testing piece. And again, that's because, as you know, and with conversations with Dr. Harrington, you know, our testing has scaled back a bit from what it's been before. We're no longer doing Saturday testing. We've got more testing being picked up by in the private sector. So we're probably seeing a little bit more education monitoring is going to be the main focus.
And so from a staffing standpoint, who's kind of going to oversee that work? I mean, are these folks going to, like, is Scott going to kind of arrange logistics around that, or what's the structure going to be?
Scott and I met yesterday afternoon, and I've tasked his office, but with some assistance that we've backfilled, that they are going to develop what will constitute a schedule for those activities. We will also designate a training regimen in terms of bringing everybody up to speed in terms of what their responsibilities and duties will be. And then lastly, a coordinator for all of those activities so that we make sure that we stay on top of that and we make sure that we stay on a good pace in terms of what we're doing. So we did the outline yesterday. If you see Scott in the next 24 hours, you may notice that both his arms are in slings right now. He's got a bit of a neck brace, but I think he's going to work through it, and we're going to get him some help and support. You bet. He's commissioners, as you know, environmental health has been really, really helpful in terms of jumping in and help us in so many ways, and we're so very grateful for that. But at the same time, I can tell you that Scott was really pleased to know that we're getting this level of participation from Steamboat and quite frankly, a paid capacity. He was really pleased.
Thank you for that. And then two questions. I assume that you all have figured out the logistics of the community testing sites with regards to just the staff transitions that are happening. Just want to make sure a yes or no is fine.
Yeah. We have, Beth, and okay. Good question, because one of my concerns, and I expressed this a little over a week and a half ago, was how much longer can we retain the rodeo grounds as far as our testing area? And Ray was good enough to follow up on that from the facility standpoint, and we can have it right into September. So we're still good to go as far as that's concerned. As you know, as we talk about the possibility of another space allocation venue for public health, that still remains a possibility that we may have testing at that venue going forward.
Okay, thank you. That's great news. I really think our community testing, it's interesting. You know, I told you guys that Hillary Cooper called me and asked about our community test site. I just didn't realize what a phenomenal effort on Carrie's part that has been. And I don't mean like big, I just mean it's pretty unique, and there's not a lot of places that are doing that in the way that she is, and I think we could probably credit some of our success in disease mitigation to those efforts around testing that she and staff have done, and just talking, I don't know if you guys saw that San Miguel is like in that red zone. They're one of the ones that's kind of on the very high concern list right this moment, and so they're really looking at trying to do larger scale surveillance testing for the community. And I think especially, you know, Carrie shared with us yesterday that they've caught several asymptomatic folks doing that screening with employees and that sort of thing, and that's how we prevent outbreaks and spread, you know. And so I think just really I would give kudos to public health for setting that up and making that happen, and want to make sure that it continues as we have this transition. One other question. This may feel a little like overkill, but I kind of, given the current situation, I don't know if it's a bad idea to just give kind of a formal thank you to the city for providing resources. I mean, I think there's some degree to which, yeah, it's mutual aid, maybe it should be expected, whatever, but I just kind of feel like the more we can say thank you to people, the better in this environment. It's just, it's tough for everybody, and they're facing some really hard budget choices too, and for them to be able to identify those resources, I just think it might be worth a thank you.
Yeah, but if maybe Kendra could draft up a letter for all three of our signatures.
I think that'd be great.
Formally thanking the city, that I think that'd be great. Kendra, can you do something like that? The answer is supposed to be yes, by the way.
We'll take care of it, commissioners. You bet. We'll make sure that we draw up a really good and very strong letter of thanks to the city of Steamboat. You bet. We'll prep it for commissioner signatures.
Yeah, and for our actual signatures, Kendra, not the DocuSign. I can certainly come in, or we can pass it around via scan, sign, and email as well. So
the San Miguel thing, that's interesting, you know, because they were the first ones that were doing the serology tests or whatever those weird tests were, and they had that, the one of their citizens or one of the people that owned property there was well-to-do, yeah, was funding and all of that.
I think they fired their PIO in the midst of those efforts too, because I think it was just sort of a debacle in the end. I mean, Hillary didn't say that. That's just my own take on what's happening.
I was kind of interested about that too, because they actually did end up testing almost every single person in the community. And you would think that they already had a lot of experience on setting up community testing sites, but.
Yeah, but they did that with the serology test, not the PCR test, and it's interesting. She said that they've been relying on clinics to do the testing, and the clinics are starting to say, we don't want to test all these people who, and they can't make money off it, you know, and they're charging people like $150 because they're requiring them to come in and have a physical in order to get tested, because that's the only way they can make the money, the dollars work. You know, and she wasn't saying anything bad about them as a result of that. She was really just saying that's the reality. And so we need to be doing some testing for our community members. Yep. So anyway.
Yeah.
Question for you, Mark. So you gave us the update yesterday on the public health site. So when are we flipping the switch or whatever, doing that?
Doug, in terms of the transfer from Carrie's position to the interim position?
No. The office space. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
You bet. Doug, good question. This next Monday, I believe it's at 1:30, we have an additional field visit scheduled, and we're going to involve a couple more people that we think are instrumental in that decision-making process. Robert from IT is going to be there. We've invited Mo and Carrie because we talked about the fact that this may serve as a supply depot for some of our PPE supplies. So we want to bring them into the conversation as well. And then we also have confirmed that our proposed interim public health director will be there as well. And certainly it's very important that she's on the ground looking at this. So once we have that, Doug, we are prepared to come back to the commissioners with a little bit more recommendation and a little more detail. We have also, based on our conversation that we had to include Eric, we have sent a communication to the realtor that represents that number one property to say, what would the availability be? What's the firm quotation in terms of square footage? Our utilization of just the areas that we need, and also checking on the zoning of that area for potential testing in the parking lot. We're wrapping all of those things together so that when we come back to you, what I'm probably gonna guess is gonna be the middle, if not the late portion of next week, we will have more of a detailed proposal with most of those questions answered. So we're still doing, Doug, quite frankly, a little bit more due diligence.
That sounds great, Mark. I appreciate it very much. Sounds great. Yeah.
You know what, Mark? Send me an invite for that. I might want to tag along.
Absolutely.
Just so I can see it with my own eyes.
You bet.
All right. Well, we actually killed all the time we had available. It really is 11 o'clock now.
Are you surprised, Tim?
No, not at all. Every once in a while, I get really optimistic about getting done with the meeting early, but I'm kind of over that.
Not very good at that. We just love talking to each other.
Yeah. Well, as it turns out, there's a lot to talk about these days. So, by the way, Doug, we were able to labor on through our BOA meeting without you, but I think you owe us one after what we went through.
I'm sorry. But probably I'm not sorry, but yeah, I always enjoy those things, reality check.
All of them were really, there was only one that actually required discussion. There were like three that were in regards to the Supreme Court case, and then there was one tabling. So there was really one we actually had to talk about.
Yeah, but the one that we discussed was hard. It was hard. Okay.
I'm having flashbacks.
All right, I think I'm ready to move forward here. I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss employee compensation. This executive session is being electronically recorded, but minutes of the meeting will not be produced. This is an executive session for discussion of a personnel matter under CRS section 24-6-4024T1 and 2, and not involving any specific employees who have requested discussion of the matter in open session, any member of this body or any elected official, the appointment of any person to fill an office of this body or of an elected official, or personnel policies that do not require the discussion of matters personal to particular employees. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is July 23rd, and the time is 11:04 a.m.
Second, and can you confirm who's joining in the executive session? I just don't know.
Mark, I assumed it would be you and the Board of County Commissioners. Was there anybody else that you wished to include in the session?
Yes, Commissioner Corrigan, I'd also like to include Kathy Nelson, our HR director, and also Eric from the County Legal Office.
Very good.
And Linnea, certainly if she wants to attend as well, I defer to Eric, but certainly Linnea as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. You should have received a link via email from Kendra with a link to the executive session.
I don't see that Kathy was included on that email, so did someone forward it to her?
She sent it to Kathy and also.
Okay.
Very good. We will see you in the executive session. Thank you.
Hey, Kendra. Are you here?
All righty then. The time is now 12:13 p.m. and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: the Board of County Commissioners, County Manager Collins, our Human Resources Director Kathy Nelson, and County Attorney Eric Knaus. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. The commissioners gave direction to County Manager Collins for hiring reasons. Is there anything else that we need to discuss today before we adjourn? I don't see anybody raising their hand, so we shall adjourn. Thank you all very much. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.